Hey, everybody, it is the John Gibson Podcast for Friday. Fridays are free. So if you've been holding back on subscribing, paying the $3.50 a month, soon to go to $5. This is your freebie. So you can decide, do I want to listen to this guy Monday through Thursday and pay for it, or just listen on Friday when he's free? Go to johngibson.com. You'll see all of the podcasts Monday through Thursday that you're missing. And you'll think, well, maybe I want to subscribe. I mean, after all, what's $5 a month? That means 25 cents per show. Right now at $3.50, it's 17 and a half cents a show. But it's going to go up 7.5 cents per show. But it's worth it, I can promise you. So as we end this week and go into Labor Day weekend, which is traditionally the kickoff to the presidential campaign leading up to November 3rd and the voting. Now, a lot of discussion about whether or not there's going to be a result known on Election Day, considering all these 80 million, I think, ballots that are going to be sent out in the mail. But I'm going to set that aside for a moment. Just as we go into the Labor Day weekend, big story in The Atlantic, a well-respected magazine by a guy named Jeffrey Goldberg, who is a well-respected, you know, kind of foreign policy guy. And in this piece, he has four sources that say one terrible thing about Trump and three sources that say another terrible thing about Trump and another three sources that say a third terrible thing about Trump. And the terrible things about Trump is that he is very disrespectful and dismissive and has no respect for members of the military. That when he was in France in 2018, he didn't want to go out to a ceremony at Bella Wood with John Kelly. He didn't want to attend a ceremony at the at another cemetery. And he said, why would I want to go out and honor a bunch of losers, according to this story? On another occasion, he said that soldiers who people who joined the military instead of going out and making money were suckers. And in a third story, he attended a ceremony at a certain section of Arlington National Cemetery with John Kelly, his then chief of staff, who had been, I think, chairman of the Joint Chiefs or head of one of the service branches. And in this section of Arlington Cemetery, John Kelly's 29-year-old son is buried. His son was killed serving in Afghanistan. Obviously, a crushing thing to John Kelly. And Trump supposedly said to Kelly, I don't get it. What was in it for them? Meaning all these young soldiers who died. You know, why would they go do this? Well, now, this story drops as we're headed into Election Day. John Bolton's account of the incident in France in his book, it differs from this story. The other thing about this is that the sources refuse to be identified. Now, Trump denied it all.
And to think that I would make statements negative to our military and our fallen heroes when nobody's done what I've done with the budgets, with the military budgets, with getting pay raises for our military. It is a disgraceful situation. They made it up. And probably it's a couple of people that have been failures in the administration that I got rid of, and I couldn't get rid of them fast enough, but or it was just made up, but it's unthinkable.
Now, you know, there was obviously some controversy about the original story in The Atlantic, so the Associated Press announces via tweet, we confirmed the story. And it's like, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It means the AP reporter calls up Jeffrey Goldberg, says, who are the sources? And Jeffrey Goldberg says, well, I'll give them to you, but they don't want their names used. You can call them up and get a confirmation. Okay, I'll do that. So the AP reporter calls up six or seven people, and they say, yeah, it's true, but don't use my name. And then the AP says, it's been confirmed. Same thing with the Washington Post. Now, considering the incendiary nature of this story and the timing of it, I mean, you know, the timing of it is just all of a sudden this story pops, and within 24 hours, a group called Vote Vets, which is anti-Trump, has an ad out.
My stepson was not a loser.
My son is not a loser.
My son, Matthew, is not a loser.
My stepson was not a sucker. Lance Corporal Alexander Scott Arredondo died in Najaf, Iraq in 2004.
My son, Sergeant James Anthony Ayoub II, gave his life in Kandahar, Afghanistan in 2010.
Mi hijo, Jesús Alberto Suárez del Solar, y murió en la guerra de Irak.
Honorably serving his country.
That is something Donald Trump will never know.
That's something that Donald Trump will never understand.
Now, how does Vote Vets manage to put together that highly produced ad literally overnight upon the publication of this article? I mean, isn't that a fair enough question? I mean, I think that, you know, don't want to, you know, attack Jeffrey Goldberg, but somehow Vote Vets knew this was coming. And so I got into a little Twitter feud with a guy who's, you know, kind of a big shot reporter, or was for a long time. And he said, confirmed by AP. And I'm going, is this a bullshit confirmation? Why won't these people put their names on it? I said, considering how important this story is, how explosive the charges are, the timing and all that, why are these people... Why is Jeffrey Goldberg, why are these people protecting their identities? Well, guess who jumps up and joins me in demanding that these people, you know, come forward publicly?
The president's denying it explicitly. So it's put up or shut up time.
Whoa.
It is September 3rd. The election is in 2 months.
Whoa.
What are these figures doing where they are insisting on anonymity? Why aren't those people coming forward and putting their names to these quotes? I think that's a big question for the morning, Don. Where are these sources? Who are these sources? And will any of them go on the record now?
Yeah, and Jeffrey Goldberg said, well, they didn't want to be on the record because they didn't want to be subject to angry tweets. Oh, well, I would just like to point out, I was not a big fan of Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman when he came to the impeachment hearings to essentially testify against his boss, and, you know, and go back to work in the White House, you know, every day. But let's give Vindman a little credit. He had the balls to come forward. You saw his face. You knew his name. You learned all about him. You know, so what's going on here? Why won't these people come forward? You know, and because if they do, then their story is subject to inspection. Then you start looking at John Bolton's version of the story in France, which is different than this story in The Atlantic. Then you start looking at other people's experiences who were there or around at the time. And these people don't, you know, what they really don't want is they don't want to be called liars in public. So they're maintaining their anonymity. Now, having said that, you know, I was listening to Donald Trump last night. He was having one of those airplane hangar rallies. And he's going to do a lot more of them, I can promise you. And he was up there you know, full of energy and, you know, doing this shtick he does, which I've been chided for for making this comparison, but it, to me, he sounded like Shecky Green on stage in Vegas in the 60s with, you know, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. out in the audience, and everybody's smoking and laughing, and he, Shecky Green, is just going off on this stream of consciousness, which he was famous for. And Shecky Green's still alive, by the way. He's 94 years old. And, you know, I got an elbow from Arnon Mishkin from the Fox Decision Desk that I dated myself referring to Shecky Green. Well, yeah, maybe I did. But it sounds like that. It just, you know, you could just imagine Trump in a tuxedo with a ruffled shirt and a bow tie standing on stage, you know, doing this shtick. And he's funny and he says all kinds of things and it's stream of consciousness and something comes to mind, then something that, you know. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is making an appearance at Kenosha, Pennsylvania, somewhere. And I swear to God, he sounds like he's dying. Now, he had a mask on, and maybe that, but, and it, partially this is a matter of what he's saying, which we could quarrel about, but just listen to him trying to breathe while he talks in a barely audible voice.
It'll be a whole heck of a lot better. We'll move a lot further down the road.
Whoa.
People fear that which is different.
Oh, geez.
We got to, for example, why in God's name don't we teach history in history classes?
Get a breath, Joe.
A black man invented the light bulb, not a white guy named Edison.
Oh, God.
Okay.
No.
There's so much. Did anybody know before what's recently happened?
Oh, my God.
That Black Wall Street in Oklahoma was burned to the ground? Anybody know these things? We act because we don't teach them. We got to give people facts.
Oh, my God.
Teach them what's out there.
My God. Democrats want this guy to be president?
There is not a single solitary reason in the world why, as I said, we shouldn't be in a position that everybody, and that's my wife, Jill.
Hey, Jill,
Jill's husband, actually.
Oh, it's just oh, my God, there's my wife, Jill.
I guess I should cut to the chase.
I mean, look, he does not sound like he's going to make it to November 3rd. He does not sound well. There's a very labored breathing. Never mind the thought processes. I mean, the whole thing about the black guy inventing a light bulb and all that, it's kind of true and it's kind of not. But the point is not what he was saying, but how he was saying it. I mean, I was just blown away. And I was listening to this, you know, on Twitter, while Trump is on the air live, and, you know, Trump is shouting and carrying on and going, you know, no matter, you can quibble all you want about what he says, but he didn't sound like he's about to fall over. I think Biden is, he's got real problems with this guy. And there's pictures that show he's holding the microphone. You can see his hand, and there's clearly a place where they had an intravenous needle in his hand. Unless somebody's manipulating the picture, I suppose that's possible, but it's like, oh my God, what's going on here? In Portland, the FBI was closing in on the guy whose name I can't pronounce. I'm sorry. But he's the guy who shot and killed the conservative protester, counter-protester who came to Portland the other day and shot him on the street. And this guy was being sought, and the FBI and the Oregon police had him cornered. They spotted him coming out of an apartment. He had a semi-automatic rifle. He allegedly fired at the officers trying to arrest him, and they fired on him and killed him. Now, this is that guy, explaining that he, this is an interview done by Vice News before he was killed, obviously, essentially admitting to the fact that he killed that that conservative Patriot Prayer Group guy the other day in Portland. Those are the shots.
No, I mean, I had a choice. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color. But I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah. Well, the guy he killed didn't have a gun. He had a bear mace because this guy was coming up and threatening him, and he was going to, you know, squirt some mace on him. And this guy shot him twice in the chest, killed him on the spot. But now he's dead. There is some, you know, people I think are naturally curious. Why are we seeing these incredible protests everywhere, especially the violent ones? Now, the FBI is investigating the funding of these people because clearly they move around the country. One night they're in Kenosha tearing things up. Next day they're in D.C. But there's a larger question. You know, how did this happen? How did this suddenly happen? It's not really about, you know, a guy like Jacob Blake getting shot. I mean, Jacob Blake was under a restraining order to stay away from his wife or girlfriend or whoever that was. He had sexually assaulted her. He refused to be arrested. He was going to get in his car. He may have had a knife in there, but he certainly would have been dangerous behind the wheel if the cops had let him go. And you just wonder, well, if it's not Jacob Blake, if it's not Rayshard Brooks, if it's not George Floyd, if it's not Michael Brown, if it's not, what's going on?
I had no choice.
Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA explained it.
If people are wondering where the unrest in our cities stems from, we have an instructional course that you can spend $74,000 a year at Washington and Lee to go learn how to overthrow your country. If you want to see where some of this insurrection is actually the root cause of it, it's in our universities.
It is in the universities. I mean, you know, I support burning certain institutions like universities, or at least a faculty lounge. Let's not forget that while the Democrats think that they're rolling to a victory in November with Wheezy Joe as head of the ticket, they're offering their opponents some fantastic distractions. There's Nancy.
I take responsibility for trusting the word of a neighborhood salon that I've been to over the years many times, and that when they said what we're able to accommodate people one person at a time and that we can set up that time, I trusted that. As it turns out, it was a setup. So I take responsibility for falling for a setup.
Yeah. Well, the salon's owner was quick to respond.
She's not getting away with that. I mean, the salon's owner, as Allison Camerota was about to introduce her there, is named Erica Kirus. And she's just been crushed by this. I mean, her business is, you know, she's not going to be able to reopen. I mean, she's getting death threats, and she's subject of, you know, an incredible vile campaign against her. And here's Nancy Pelosi worth $114 million, living in a multi-million dollar mansion in Pacific Heights, drives down the hill to Union Street to go to this shop, which is closed. The owner's not able to make money. Her staff isn't able to make money. Nancy goes in, uses the studio, and then it goes out and claims that she was set up, and she's crushing this woman, this small businesswoman, as if there is a phalanx of right-wing hairdressers in San Francisco bent on bringing Nancy down. I can assure you, as a longtime resident of San Francisco, that is not the case. Then there's Andrew Cuomo, who threw this little juicy thing out.
He can't come back to New York. He can't. He's going to walk down the street in New York. Forget bodyguards. He better have an army if he thinks he's going to walk down the street in New York.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're between Cuomo and Nancy, they've given the Republicans, you know, something to talk about. And while, you know, that's a good thing, I guess. What's even better is the jobs report today, 1.4 million new jobs. The unemployment rate drops down to 8%. It had been, you know, much higher. Rick Santelli at CNBC.
I think that this is wonderful news. And I think that we have to keep a perspective that there's many people that really, really want to come back to work. But their governors just don't see it. It's the correct time, although some seem to be changing their mind. So I think this report will lead to even more strength in future reports.
Right. The one area where Trump polls ahead of Biden in a key state like Pennsylvania is the economy. And he polls ahead of him by about 8 points. I want to play this next bite for you just to give you sort of a, you know, in a nutshell, what the anti-Trump media, you know, what they think about and what they say about the current situation with the riots and the, you know, the insistence that somehow black people are being, you know, treated terribly by this society, that there's systemic racism everywhere. I mean, they're just buying it hook, line, and sinker. But they had, so CNN had a woman on today, and I'm sorry, I forget her name, but she's an academic, and she wrote a book, and she says that America has a caste system. Like India's caste system, where there's, you know, the untouchables on the bottom and there's, you know, whoever they are on the top. And in this American caste system, blacks are on the bottom. And what was interesting about it, she's going on and on about, you know, this caste system. But what's really interesting is what Allison Camerota said when the woman finished.
And so the less that you have to rely on in other ways to feel better and more secure, the more you will rely on inherited ranking, that which is what I'm calling a caste system.
Oh, my gosh. Your book is just so, yeah. It's so enlightening.
It's so enlightening. Your book is so enlightening. This caste system in America. Evil America and its evil caste system. Okay, so let's go check out the email at host@johngibson.com, shall we? Ted writes me, can you post your podcast at a consistent time? You don't have a job. Well, okay. But here's an example. I try to get it out, you know, sometime between noon my time and 3 o'clock my time in that window. And I understand that, you know, people would like to get it at a consistent time, but it's, you know, like this morning I had a plumbing leak in the house. I had to go deal with it, you know, for an hour. Okay, so I'm an hour late to do this. I'm sorry, Ted, but, you know, what do you want for 25 cents a show? Okay, I'm getting a note from my friend, and I, this is a long time back, John Alter, big liberal guy, you know, media guy. He's written a book about Jimmy Carter, and he wants me to interview him about his book, and I'm going to. And we'll have a civilized conversation. I like John. We disagree, and you guys would disagree with his politics too, but, you know, what the heck? We can stand to hear it. Tom writes me, I've enjoyed your show for years. After O'Reilly left the radio and Tony Snow passed on, you were all I had left. As far as the COVID explosion in Iowa goes, I guess Tom's in Iowa, is it any wonder that happens when a large percentage of the 18 to 24-year-old population from the western suburbs of Chicago flock here for lower tuition than in-state tuition in Illinois? They hit the under-policed bars and wham, COVID goes way up. Also, we have an outbreak in our local prison, and now the communist local school board votes our kids out of school despite the CDC published a paper saying the non-COVID affect of students not being in a school, effect of students not being in school, is worse than COVID-19. Damn teachers union shaming our school board. On top of that, our Republican governor is in a pissing match with the teachers union. So to punish liberal school boards, all schools are going online. All schools going online have to cancel extracurricular activities despite the fact there have been no documented cases of COVID transmission during sporting events. Don't get me started at these MFers kneeling at the anthem. Okay. Lots of pent-up energy here for voting for Trump, and I'm proud of it. That's Tom. I did an interview today on WOR with Joe Concha. It's too late now. Maybe it's, you know, repetitive online, but it was in the 11:30 Eastern, if you want to go listen to WOR Joe Concha show. Ed Fogel writes me. In the interview you reported on today's podcast, Bill Barr said it's logic that leads him to believe there could be widespread voter fraud with mass mail-in votes. This brings up something that bugs me in two ways. First, it seems like every time Trump conjectures about something, the reporter always adds, with no evidence. Well, sometimes you don't have to have evidence, just some semblance of a brain. The other thing about this is the reporters never add the caveat when reporting similar conjecture by those on the left. More double standards at work. By the way, I'm not on Nancy Pelosi's side, but I can say this in her defense. It seems the hair salon owner didn't tell Pelosi, no, we can't do that, when asked to open the shop. Apparently, she accommodated Nancy and then put out the video. I'd call foul on that, too. Well, yeah, Ed's in Claremore, Oklahoma. Actually, you got a fact mixed up there, Ed. The owner of the shop was notified by text by the a stylist who rented a chair that he was going to have Nancy come in. And maybe she could have said, you can't do that, but the point was already made. Snake Johns writes me about the Red Mirage. Up here in Washington State, this is nothing new. King County is twice the size of Rhode Island, about the size of Delaware. It's also the most populated county in the state, heavily left-leaning, and is consistently the last to report vote totals. By talking up this Red Mirage idea, are some simply trying to plant these seeds early so that if election fraud takes place, there's already an alternative explanation for a surprising come-from-behind Biden win. That's probably true. So, you know, the Red Mirage is a Democrat group is doing a study and says Trump's going to win on Election Day, but it's a mirage because when the mail-in votes are counted, Biden will win. Rick writes me, and this is the last letter. I heard you say on your podcast today that they got caught and took it down. Well, it was still working when I tried. Okay, this is when I said Antifa.com linked directly to Joe Biden's website. When I tried, it had been taken down, but apparently Rick tried it, and it was still operating. The bitch box the number is 859-544-2766. Got this.
Hey, John, it's Neil. One last comment on the Blake shooting. When he escaped from the officers that were trying to arrest him, he was running towards his weapon. The weapon was not a knife under the front seat. The weapon was a car. And in shooting his worthless ass, the police not only were protecting themselves, but they very well have saved the lives of those children that he had willfully brought in possession with him to commit a crime, and he was clearly ready to use his human shields to protect his worthless ass. Anyway, I hope that he enjoys his time in his wheelchair because it's well deserved. Thanks,
Josh. All right, Neil. Okay, I got this call as well.
It's Drew. Can you do an interview with Bill in real Virginia, I say I got to hear more about Nancy Pelosi.
Okay, yeah, we'll try to get Bill in real Virginia on. Thanks, Drew. It's always good to hear from you.
Hi, John. Ron in Etna, California. A couple bitches tonight. The first bitch is Nancy Pelosi, and I can't believe how indignant that woman is. So I hope she gets the chronic runs from eating too much Whitman sampled chocolate. The second one is my favorite, Michelle Obama. I heard her bitching about walking her dog and how people ignore her and don't pay attention to her and don't even know it's her, but they pet the dog. I don't know how you get 10 feet near that woman with all the security she's probably got, but what a loony tune. And from the looks of her, she is, you know, used to be so healthy on this health kick and stuff. And she looks like she's consumed every lobster and every cube of butter on the East Coast. So I think she should go back to whittling broccoli sticks, sticking with that shit. And I hear all this talk about how people are going to be evicted because they can't pay their rent. I've heard no mention from anyone how a landlord might have a mortgage and rely on that rent to pay the mortgage. So I think, you know, somebody's got to be talking about that and thinking about that as well. So anyway, I'm a landlord. Anyway, thanks for what you do, and keep up the good work. Talk to you soon.
All right, appreciate it. Okay, did not get a call from Khalil today. He's checked out for the weekend. He's wishing everybody a safe and sane Labor Day weekend. The birthday guy, you know, those of you who haven't heard the podcast before, I occasionally will play a songwriter's songs done by, you know, somebody else for the birthday music at the end of the podcast. And because I don't know, I have a soft spot for songwriters. And the birthday today is Jerry Ragavoy. He was born on this day in 1930, and he died in 2011. That would have made him 81. Yeah, 81. But he wrote a bunch of hits, and especially wrote a bunch of R&B songs. He wrote that song "Piece of My Heart" that Janis Joplin did, and he wrote this one that a lot of people did. But one of the best versions, it was by the Rolling Stone. It's called "Time, Time, Time Is on My Side."
Searching for
Jerry Ragavoy is a songwriter. He wrote a bunch of songs. Anytime You Need Me, Garnett Mims and the Enchanters. That was a hit in 1963. It's covered by The Who. He wrote Cry Baby for Garnett Mims. That was covered by 19 different artists. It wrote a whole bunch of songs. Girl Happy with Doc Pomus, which was recorded by Elvis Presley in 1965. Jerry Ragavoy was quite a prolific songwriter. And, you know, every so often I play a songwriter song instead of a musician song. So tell your friends, turn it up, and tell your friends, hey, the podcast is free today. Go check it out at johngibson.com, and you'll be able to, you know, sort of get a hint of what you'd get if you just subscribe for a mere $5 a month, $60 a year. Can you imagine? 25 cents a show. You can't get a better deal than that unless it's a peep show. So tell your friends. It's free today and Friday. Write to me at host@johngibson.com. Call the Bitch Box at 859-544-2766. Follow me on Twitter @GibsonRadio.